Good morning, church. Thank you, Derek, for that. It's one of my favorite paintings. Hey, a couple of announcements really quick. One, our first men's breakfast of the year, of the new year, is next Sunday. If you've never been before, hope you'll give it a try. We meet in the dining hall, which is just down the hallway there at 9 a.m. Once a month. Huh? It's two Sundays? It's two Sundays from now on February 1st. And I hope you'll come. We just spent a little bit of time together before we come in and join the rest of the church. So put it on your calendar, February 1. Also, the Sunday after that, which would make it three Sundays from now, February 8th, we're going to celebrate campus's 54th birthday. And it'll be fun. Lauren sent out a little questionnaire this week. Some of you have already been answering some of those questions, but if you haven't, go look for that in your email and do us a favor and answer some of those questions. We'll celebrate in some different ways. We'll have cake and lunch together afterwards. So also, if you know people who've kind of moved away but are close enough to drive in, I've been telling some of the folks that have moved to the outskirts of Georgia, telling them about that date, tell them and invite them back. We'd love to see some of our old friends. Right, church? So for our giving moment this morning, many of us tomorrow are going to be remembering and celebrating the life of Martin Luther King Jr. And so I thought we would, for the giving moment, consider one of the many quotes from one of King's sermons. I love this one. "Let the church stop trying to outstrip each other in the number of their adherents, the size of its sanctuary, the abundance of wealth. If we must compete, let us compete to see which can move toward the greatest attainment of truth, the greatest service of the poor, the greatest salvation of the souls and bodies of men. If the church entered this type of competition, we can imagine what a better world this would be." I love that, don't you? One of the reasons I love it and would like to just invite you to be thinking about it this morning, we always want to just pause and have a what we call our giving moment here, because our relationship with possessions and wealth and generosity, both just individually and as a community together, is so integral to our journey with Jesus. And I love that quote because I think that campus reflects that in so many ways, that we imagine ourselves to be a community that is generous because we want to make a difference in the world, not because we want to become a wealthy church or a humongous church or any of those things, but we want to make a difference for the poorest and the richest among us, inviting human beings into the good life in all of the ways that we can. Right, church? All right, we're talking about the sacraments this morning. We're in the second sermon in the series, and I'll be honest with you, I have all of these things that I really want to say, and it's hard to, like, you know, slow down, just say a few of them each Sunday, and so I'm going to try and do that. We're specifically focusing on the table, which Derek just led us into, and baptism. This morning we'll talk about the table of the Lord. I was telling Derek afterwards that some art historians believe that Rublev put a little mirror there in that bottom space so that when people would come to look at the painting, they would see themselves at the table with the Father and the Son and the Spirit. And I was thinking about it this morning as Derek was talking and thinking about how the idea of that is beautiful, as Derek invited us to imagine ourselves at the table with God. But the reality of it, I think, would be a little bit disturbing, you know? Stepping up to a beautiful painting. If you're like me, you forget who you are and what you look like during the day. You ever, you know, sort of forget that you've aged or that, you know, you don't look like you imagine yourself to look like, and you make the mistake of seeing yourself in a reflection, and it's not always exciting, you know? Am I the only one? You know? I don't look like Brad Pitt again today. You come to this beautiful painting with all of its layers, and invitation, and then you just see your old human self there. And what if you were in a gallery and you see all of the other imperfect human beings reflected? It seems almost not right, doesn't it? For the broken humanity to be invited to the table of the Lord, where the Father and the Son and the Spirit abide and celebrate together. And yet, this is the beauty of this particular sacrament that we celebrate. Well, last week, I gave you a little definition. Here's kind of our working definition of sacrament, especially for those of us who aren't used to that term very much. A sacrament is rituals that invite us into intimate experiences with God. Later in the series, we'll talk a little bit more about the value of ritual. For some of us, the word ritual was kind of a, you know, we don't use that word around here. But our working definition is that the sacraments are these rituals that are gifts from God that invite human beings into ongoing intimate experiences with God. St. Ignatius used this phrase, the way of proceeding. The way of proceeding is a way of living in which one seeks to recognize every encounter and experience of life as a divine moment. This is what the sacrament feeds, this is what the sacrament invites us into. It is this moment in which in some way we experience the divine and are invited to experience all of the moments of life as the surprise reflection of ourselves seated at table with Father and Son and Spirit. And so last week we talked about divine residue. I really like that. I like that term, divine residue. This, we've come from the table together and we've experienced lots of things at the table. And our hope is that by the help of the Holy Spirit, the divine will abide in us and with us, and all of the moments will be holy. Okay, well, this morning I want to read from the Gospel of Luke in chapter 24 and then just talk about this little verse for a moment, okay? Chapter 24, beginning of verse 27. By the way, this is post-crucifixion, post or sort of in the middle of resurrection experiences for the disciples. There are two disciples of Jesus who are on their way to a town called Emmaus, and they have expectations of Jesus' resurrection. They've heard some whispers and some rumors, but they are, for the most part, living in this space that lots of us live in, and that is uncertainty about what's going to happen next and where God is and what God is up to. And really, they seem to be pretty discouraged about what they've, understandably, about what they've just witnessed happening to the person in whom they've placed their hope and who they've called the Messiah, Jesus. Verse 27, the beginning, I'm jumping into the middle here. Jesus meets the two disciples on the way to Emmaus, and they begin to have this conversation. And Jesus, Luke says, they're unable to recognize him, which there's a lot to be said about that and what happens to bodies after death and resurrection. They don't recognize him, and they begin to have dialogue. Jesus is asking them questions. They're a little bit surprised that this Jewish man doesn't know about everything that has happened. And they tell him about what has happened and about what they had hoped and about their discouragement. And Jesus begins then to take on the role of rabbi and explain to them, didn't you know that this story that you've experienced, that this is how you should have expected it to be, that the Messiah would come and be the sacrificing liberator of his people. When you watched the event of the cross, which we just remembered and celebrated together, you were seeing the story being unfolded as God willed it to be unfolded. As Jesus is speaking with them in verse 27, it says, then beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he interpreted to them the things about himself in all the scriptures. Of all of the, you know, there are a lot of places within the scriptures I would have loved to just get to hop in and be a fly on the wall. Wouldn't that be one of them? To hear the rabbi explain the scriptures and the unfolding of his own story. As they came near the village to which they were going, he walked ahead as if he were going on. But they urged him strongly, saying, "Stay with us, because it's almost evening and the day is now nearly over." So he went in to stay with them. When he was at the table with them, he took bread, blessed, and broke it, and gave it to them. Then their eyes were opened, and they recognized him, and he vanished from their sight. This is quite a story, you know? You think, well, if I had just one, if I could just have half of an experience like that, I would be so different, you know? I would never doubt. I would never wonder. I would always, always be confident in my faith. They said to each other, "Were not our hearts burning within us while he was talking to us on the road, while he was opening the scriptures to us?" That same hour they got up and returned to Jerusalem, and they found the 11 and their companions gathered together. They were saying, the 11 were saying, "The Lord has risen indeed, and he has appeared to Simon." Then they, these two, told what had happened on the road and how he had been made known to them in the breaking of the bread. I really like this story. It's one of my favorites. And I would encourage you, we'll talk about this just for a moment here, but I would encourage you, if you have interest, as we work our way through this series called The Sacraments, to go back and read the Gospel of Luke and then read Acts, at least the first half of Acts, understanding that we have the same author here telling one continuous story, and pay attention to what Luke wants to say about the table. Luke has a lot to say about humanity and Jesus' work and the invitation to the table. We'll talk about this a little bit later on in the series, but I think it's informative about some of the things maybe we've missed about what the table is all about and what Jesus' intentions were when he said, by the way, every time you break the bread together and you share the cup together, remember me, remember my body broken for you and my blood shed for you. What was it that Jesus imagined? And how have we sometimes maybe missed the boat just a little bit on what it was that Jesus was inviting them into? Well, I want to say two things about this little story. We could say lots of things about it. One of the things I love about this story, and really about the way especially the gospel writers tell story of real, authentic humanity, is that the road to Emmaus is so reflective of our journeys, isn't it? All of these expectations and experiences and moments in which you have fallen in love with a Messiah, or you are captivated by a Messiah, you have hopes for the future of what this Messiah will do, and then into the midst of this journey is surprise, and surprise in some really unwanted ways. And coming with that surprise for us so often can be moments of great doubt and discouragement, but they're mingled with hope. You know, you if you go back and read the story, you hear like they're saying, you know, "We had hoped." And they even mention that there's this third day, and we've heard rumors of his rising. We had hoped this is really the gritty, when you see yourself in the mirror at the table and you see your full humanity, and carried with that are hopes and faith and doubt all wrapped up into one. Aren't they, church? And this is the space in which we come to enjoy the gift of sacrament. That this really is what life is like for most human beings. It's so up and down, and certain and then uncertain, and full of conviction and then full of doubt, and success and then failure. And the sacrament is this something that happens along the way. It's, as we talked about last week, it is the invitation to tell story again to one another, because we understand that sometimes the journey is long, We tell story about what we had hoped for. At the table, we tell story about what we believe happened. And the story creates this divine residue for what we don't know is going to happen tomorrow. I told you I was going to try and tell story along the way in this series. And I'm sometimes hesitant to tell what I grew up calling preacher stories, you know, because they always had happy endings. My dad had a lot of crazy stories that would happen to him. And I remember, we were talking about it this week, I remember as an 11 and 12-year-old thinking, God, you know, when am I going to have my own stories? It's been 11 years now, and I don't have any great stories, you know. But there is something about the story, about struggle and doubt, and then these little moments of the arrival of God that are their own sort of divine residue along the way, on the road to Emmaus, as it were. My dad was a pastor, we grew up in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and he worked at the same church for 40 years. And he wrote a number of books that were, they were published. And I'm sure when he wrote those books, he had all kinds of, you know, hopes and dreams for those books. But they got published. And years ago, I don't even remember which book it was, but he'd written a book, and there was some person, he doesn't know who it was, living in Lubbock, Texas, took one of his books and went into I think it was the library at Texas Tech, went into the library there and just secretly put his book into the shelves there. You know, like, I imagine that this person had been through the horrors of door knocking and decided this is a new form of evangelism. I'm not going to knock on anyone's door. I'm just going to put this book here. I really like it. And then a miracle will happen, you know. And the rest of life is the road to Emmaus, wondering, whatever happened with that book, you know? Well, a young college student, I think her name was Heather. We're going to go with Heather. I can't really remember for sure. Found the book and started to read the book and was captivated by it. She wasn't a follower of Jesus, but it just hit her at the right moment, and she began a dialogue with my dad from Lubbock, Texas to Tulsa, Oklahoma, and she became a follower of Jesus. How about that? So you don't have to knock on doors anymore. Just take a good book and put it in the library, and you're done, all right? A number of years later, Dad stayed in some distant contact with Heather. A number of years later, one of the young men at the church there in Tulsa named LeGrand, I told this story years ago. I don't know if you remember it. Derek said, you don't listen to my sermons. So I never said that to Derek. I don't know what he's talking about. A young man named LeGrand, who had a wife and a small child, was in the military, and he was overseas involved in a conflict. And word came back, it was scattered, it was unclear, that LeGrand had been seriously injured in battle. And it was that moment on the walk to Emmaus was full of discouragement and uncertainty and devastation and wondering and hoping and praying and crock pots, all of the things that Christian people do really well, you know. We come over to the house, we give crock pots, and we say we're going to pray, you know. And everyone's gathering together praying, and everyone's desperate for news about LeGrand. Is he alive? Is he okay? How is he? He was severely wounded. LeGrand lived, is alive today, has some physical, pretty serious struggles because of that event. But what happened in the waiting on the road to Emmaus for Memorial Drive Church of Christ and for Terry Rush and for everyone who loved this young man so much was, as they're waiting for news and waiting to hear about his condition, and you know, he's so far away, and this person that you love, and you want to be there with him, and you know, you want to experience this with him. And Dad gets word from this woman named Heather, who found his book at Texas Tech in Lubbock, Texas, and that began a journey for her in which she became a follower of Jesus Christ. She was a nursing student at Texas Tech, and she sends word to Dad from Germany and says, I'm with LeGrand, and he's okay, and I'm caring for him, and I'm loving him for the body there in Tulsa, Oklahoma. That's a preacher story, isn't it? Yeah, I mean, not every story In our lifetime has endings like that, but there's something about the stories that we tell each other, the story that we tell each other at the table, this table on the road to Emmaus, that creates for us divine experience and divine residue, because we understand with each other. When we come to the table, we've seen our reflection in the mirror, and we know that sometimes the days along the road are long, aren't they, church? We need each other at the table. When COVID happened and people discovered that they could attend church in their pajamas, you know, and all of a sudden there was this kind of like this movement of people who decided, you know, this whole church thing could be done online and all of that, which is a wonderful gift, especially for our shut-ins and people who can't be with us. But it created this dynamic, it revealed a misunderstanding for us. That some of us have lost sense of our need to be at table with one another, to experience the divine together, and to tell the story again together. Well, the road to Emmaus is so much like our own journey. But I wanted to point out this something about the story. And if you'll go back and read the Gospel of Luke and then Acts, maybe you'll come to this conclusion too. Luke says that it was when he broke bread that they saw him for who he was. And then they go and report to the disciples, and everyone's excited and telling the story. And they say, you know, he had made himself known to them in the breaking of the bread. We're going to come back to this more throughout the series, but I just want to leave this something with you about this particular sacrament. And that is that this table that Derek led us to, in which we not only examine the mysteries of the divine, but receive invitation to join the divine together at table, has always been the goal. This is always what God has been aiming for. John Mark Hicks wrote a wonderful book about our experience at the table. And he makes this point that the altar and the table are not the same thing. The altar, this place of sacrifice, and sacrifice that leads toward liberation. The altar is the cross. The cross event is the altar, but the cross isn't the end of the story. It isn't even the aim of the story. It is the vehicle of the story, and the aim of the story is the table. And they are not the same thing. It's true that when we gather at the table, and we'll talk about this more in the series, but you know, I've said this before, that I believe that Jesus meant every table, every breaking of bread, every sharing of cup together is the table of the Lord. It is this daily invitation into sacrament to receive the divine and the divine residue as we make our way. And it is true that when we gather at the table helps lead us back to the altar. We use remembrance language a lot when we talk about this sacrament. We need this. We need remembrance language. We need to tell the story to each other over and over and over again. We don't just tell it, we sing about it, because there's something about singing the words and how it stirs our hearts, and singing them together, and how it invites us back into remembering what happened, that for which we are thankful, that something that we believe about the meaning of life. The table takes us back to the altar. But it's also true that the altar has always been leading us to the table. This is our destination. The table in which we together experience divine love. This has always been God's aim. I would argue, if you went back and read Luke and Acts, and then read everything Paul has written, and then, you know, you're going to have 50 more questions. But a significant part of Paul's aim is trying to figure out with the early church, how do we do this? How do we live into this something that God has been aiming for all along? And that is the communal experience of love at table together. This isn't just something that we do as an act of obedience, you know, to check off the liturgy and to do the things that we've been commanded to do. It is something that we do because it is the something that we've been invited into. It's been God's aim all along. All of the nations and all of the languages, all of the peoples of the world gathered at table because they've been liberated by the Messiah, the cross of Jesus Christ. This sacrament that we share together is the aim. It is already and it is not yet. It is a reflection of this something that we believe we experience in eternity together, gathered around the table of the Lord with all of those who've come before and all of those who are yet to come, welcomed at the table because of the liberating work of Jesus Christ. It is the table of love, and it has always been God's aim. Are you with me, church? This shapes us, doesn't it? It shapes us. It helps us not only imagine what our lives are to be, but it shapes how we experience all of the experiences along the way. It is at the table of love that they saw Jesus for who he is. One more MLK quote. Probably heard this one. Love is the greatest force in the universe. It is the heartbeat of the moral cosmos. He who loves is a participant in the being of God. This is what we believe, isn't it, church? This is what Jesus said in this little section of teachings and prayers in the Gospel of John in chapter 15. This is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. No one has greater love than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends. This is what we remind ourselves of in the sacrament of the table. The table leads us back to the cross and back to our own commitment to cruciformity. And that event of the cross leads us to the kind of table, the kind of life around table that we are to experience. Church, stand with me if you would. So I want to invite you today to reflect this week, to reflect on our communal experience at the table. And I want to invite you to imagine this experience happening at every table that you share. Many of you are going to share table today. It might be tacos and you know, Diet Coke. But you're going to share table, and you're going to do that thing that human beings do every day. They break bread together, and they share cup together. And in that doing, we have an imagination about this table that we never would have had if the cross event hadn't happened for us, if Jesus hadn't given us this sacrament to invite us into a much larger imagination of where we're headed on the road to Emmaus. The sacrament informs us. It gives us this divine presence in all of our experiences along the way. I'm inviting you into that throughout this series, into storytelling and remembering the sacrament that you experience and asking the Spirit of God to bring that divinity into all of the moments of your day as you make your way along the road. Not all of them are going to be stories with surprising endings or spectacular miracles. Many of those days are just going to be another day along the road in which we need the table together. Right, church? Well, let's close with this prayer together, and then we'll sing again. I love this prayer from Essential Mystic Prayers, which many of you have. Oh, my God, I thank you and I praise you for accomplishing your holy and all-lovable will without any regard for mine. Man, that is the road to Emmaus, isn't it? With my whole heart, in spite of my heart, do I receive this cross I feared so much. It is the cross of your choice, the cross of your love, and I venerate it. Nor for anything in the world would I wish that it had not come, since you willed it. I keep it with gratitude and joy, as I do everything that comes from your hand, and I shall strive to carry it without letting it drag, with all respect and all affection which your works deserve. Let's worship together.